Did you know that as well as running tours and workshops on our little farm, we also make and sell soap and other body products? Here is the story of how our soap making adventure started. Welcome to the Homesteading Roller Coaster. My name is Ilaria, and in this podcast, I share my family's adventures on Tatum Hills Farm, our property on Ngunnawal Country, just outside of Canberra, Australia. We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise the continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. In this podcast, we discuss anything to do with farm life, homesteading, sustainable living, growing your own, and much more. So let's get started. Our soap making adventure started 6 years ago when we adopted our first goat, Tag. She was pregnant and we were expecting her to deliver a few babies. Our plan was to share the milk with them and then slowly take over the milking as they grew older. But that's not how it went. Monty was the only baby that she delivered. He was very healthy and very strong, but he was by himself. So very quickly we had to get in there and start helping him because otherwise Mum would have got sick as he wasn't draining all the milk. So we started trying to make some cheese. And we have had very success with it. We've now perfected it and we'll probably have a whole episode on that. But as more and more milk came in, we started to think what else we could do with the milk. We on our farm are always looking for ways that we can share what we produce. We really love sharing the bounty, but also we really love making a little bit of money because keeping all the animals and regenerating our land as we're trying to do does take a lot of cash. So if there are ethical ways that we can make a bit of extra money, they're always very welcome. So the idea of goat milk soap came to mind. And so very quickly we started looking into how to do that. And even though milk soap is a little bit of an advanced technique compared to regular soap, that's actually how we started. We started trying different methods to make milk soap. And then as time went on, then we went to make soap with the other ingredients and without the milk. So now we actually have a little business where we sell soap. We make our soap and we sell it, and we include the milk of our goats for some of our products, but we also have a line of vegan products. And they both sell quite well, we find. So here it is. That's how we got started. And as we started making different soap recipes and trying to find different ideas to make our soap stand out, because of course there is plenty of soap to buy out there, we also started to look at the garden for a variety of herbs and flowers and other things that we could include in our products. Before we get into how to make soap, I'd like to tell you that the type of soap we make is called cold process soap. And that is different to another type of soap that you might be familiar with, which is called melt and pour. The melt and pour soap you can often buy in little kits for children to use. And it's basically a soap base that it's already made that you can melt down and then you can add your creative flair to it by maybe adding some colors or some herbs or some other ingredients or some scent. What we're doing is different. We're actually making soap from scratch with the cold process method. But to do this, you do need to use a chemical which is called lye or sodium hydroxide or caustic soda, which is a bit dangerous. So that is why it's very important that you do not use this podcast as a manual on how to make soap. This podcast is just an information piece about how we got to our little soap business. So if you decide that you would like to make soap yourself, I do really urge you to find a workshop. We run workshops if you're in our area, or a tutorial online or a book where you can actually learn how to make soap. But here is just a brief piece of information. So the three major ingredients for making soap are a fat or a butter, a liquid, and the sodium hydroxide. You need to mix these three products together, and what you obtain at the other end is soap and glycerin. And having the glycerin in there is particularly beneficial because the glycerin helps the skin retain its natural moisture. And so thanks to that glycerin, your skin will feel nourished and moisturized after you use a handmade soap, much more than after using even the most luxurious of commercially made soaps. And that's because in a commercially made soap, the glycerin has been removed to be used in other products. So even a very ordinary homemade soap usually feels a lot nicer to the skin than a commercial soap. That's only the case, of course, if the homemade soap has been formulated correctly. So again, that is something that requires a whole course about how to learn that. But when you make soap, you need to formulate it correctly so that you add the correct amount of lye, sodium hydroxide, to your specific combination of oils and fats and butters in order for the soap to be balanced and work well. So if you formulate your soap correctly using the correct formulas, then your soap will be just beautiful. Now, very important when you're handling the lye that you pay some attention. The lye is a very strong alkali, so it's a bit like bleach. It's very high on the pH scale. And so if it hits your skin or your eyes, it can be very damaging. And for that reason, you need to treat it with a bit of caution. You need to make sure that you're fully covered. You've got long pants, long sleeves, an apron. You've got safety goggles and safety gloves. You need to make sure that you always add the lye powder to your liquid of choice, not the opposite, and that you do that outside because there's fumes being released, and also that you make sure the container you're doing that in can withstand heat, because this reaction of mixing the lye with the liquid will release a lot of heat. So once you've taken all your precautions and you've got your lye solution, you let it cool it down a little bit and you mix it with your oils. And once you do, you have the saponification reaction happening. And that works pretty quickly. Within just a few minutes, you have liquid soap that you can then pour into a mold and it will solidify. You will need to let it sit for about 4 to 6 weeks before you can sell it or give it away or use it yourself. Although the soap will be solid within a day or two, depending on your recipe, it will need to sit there for the full reaction to happen within itself. So the lye needs to react with the fats completely because you don't want any raw lye on your skin. So that will happen usually within the first 24, 48 hours or a little bit longer. But then the soap will still be pretty soft and mushy, and if it hits water, it will just dissolve really quickly. So after a couple of days, you can unmold your soap, cut it into bars, and then let it sit on a rack for 4 to 6 weeks. And that will ensure that the last little bit of the reaction between the lye and the fats happens and the saponification is complete. But also, it will allow any extra water to evaporate away from your soap, making it much harder and much stronger. So it will last longer once people start using it and obviously putting it underwater. So that's it. That's the whole process of making soap. It is not that difficult and it is very addictive and a lot of fun. You just have to know a few crucial pieces of information, such as how to formulate your recipes correctly and how to protect yourself and treat the lye with respect, and then you're off. It is very rewarding because even as a beginner, you can usually make a reasonable soap. But the real fun begins when you feel a little bit more confident and you can start formulating different recipes. As well as choosing different oils and fats to go in your soap recipe, you can substitute some of your water that you're using to dissolve the lye for milk, like we do for milk soap, or for juices or tea. Any liquid really will do. So that's one way that you can really customize your recipes. The other one, of course, is to add infusions like lavender infusion. We have one of our soaps that we have a violet infusion. We have lots of plants of violets that grow wild here, and violet can actually be really soothing to your skin. And so we make an infusion with the violet leaves and we use that as our liquid portion of the soap. So that's one example. You can always also dry flowers and sprinkle them on top of your soap. We do that a lot, and we usually pair that with an infusion within the soap from the same plant. And so those are just some ways that we have found to incorporate our garden and our land into our products. So even the vegan products that might not have the goat's milk, they will often have still something from our garden. So we really do try to look around us and get nature around us to inspire us on what kind of recipes we can make. Another thing, of course, is the colors. You can go really crazy with soap colors, and there's some really artistic creations out there. For us, again, we're trying to stick to nature as much as possible. So we only use natural micas and clays or vegetable powders such as wheat powder to color our soaps. So our soaps don't often have as vibrant a color as some of the soaps that you can buy in the shops, but that's because they have colors that are naturally found in the wild. They're not chemical made in a lab. So again, there's nothing really wrong with lab made colors. It's just a choice that we've made to try and stick to nature as closely as possible. And our customers seem to appreciate that. And that's something to consider if you're going to maybe potentially start a business. What makes you different from other things around? And so one of the things that makes us different is that we really try to have natural ingredients only. The other thing that's really important for soap is scent. If you show a bunch of people some bars of soap, the first thing that they'll do, they'll grab it and they'll sniff it. And so initially, when I first started making soap, I was making unscented soap, and that wasn't selling very well at all. As soon as I started making scented soap, they started selling quite well. Some people do prefer unscented soap, and I keep thinking I should have at least one unscented soap in my range. But in my experience, the vast majority of people prefer scented soap, so that's what I'm making at the moment. Again, just like with the colors, you can choose between a natural scent and a lab-made scent. The lab-made scents are quite fun because you can get all sorts of different scents, including, I've never actually had a chance to smell it, but there is apparently one soap scent, it's called Monkey Farts. Now, I would love to know what that's like, because surely it can't smell of that thing, given that it's going to be on a soap. But those are all things, of course, that you can only have if you're making them in a lab. So although they're a lot of fun, they don't go with our ethos of only sticking to natural ingredients. So what we use are essential oils. Sadly, not all essential oils cope with the harsh reaction of saponification. So we are a little limited, but there's still heaps of good ones that we can use. The other downside of only using essential oils is that they are a lot pricier than a lab-made fragrance. And so our soaps tend to be on the pricier side of the range. But again, that's just a choice we've made. The only way of getting a natural scent in there is to use essential oils. So that's what we're using. As for the actual oils and butters that we use in our recipes, olive oil, coconut oil, and shea butter are the ones that we use the most. Olive oil is great because we can source it locally. And most of the time we can buy olive oil that is a little bit second grade from the groves that we have around here. And that is just such a fantastic way of using a local ingredient. As for coconut and shea butter, we can't get those locally. Coconut is from the Pacific, and shea butter is from the African regions. Ours, I think, comes from Ghana. So those are not an option in terms of local ingredients, but we do try to at least pick the most ethical ones that we can possibly find. And we have found two fantastic companies that have established enterprises for mostly women, but communities in general in the countries where these plants grow, the shea butter, the shea nut plants and the coconut palms. And so those communities that would otherwise not have a huge amount of option in terms of having an income now can have an income thanks to these enterprises and us buying the products. We have also made a conscious decision not to go palm oil free. That's right, you heard me right. Not to go palm oil free. So we do include palm oil in some of our recipes. In fact, out of about 10, 12 recipes that we make regularly, only two of them have palm oil in them. And we thought long and hard about this because palm oil has a very bad reputation and a lot of it is perfectly justified. The cultivation of palms to produce palm oil can cause a huge amount of devastation to the environment, the loss of habitat for orangutans, and certainly are a really tragic environmental disaster. However, we have done a lot of research, and there seems to be another side to this, as there often is. And so, in our particular opinion, mine mostly, there is an alternative. So whenever you decide to completely go without an ingredient or a food or something, you need to very rarely you can completely do without. You have to substitute it. So in the case of the soap, if you take that out, the palm oil out, you might need to add more of something else. And although usually what you would substitute palm oil for is coconut or shea butter, and as I just said, we have really good sources of those, in other areas the substitution might not be that easy. And so we have found a really good source that we're comfortable with for our palm oil. Our palm oil actually doesn't come from Malaysia, it comes from Colombia, and it is accredited by independent bodies to be extremely sustainable and environmentally friendly, and again, help the communities that grow it to make an income for themselves. So we're still using sparingly, but we do use it and we talk about it openly with our customers because I think it's important to have this conversation. And this is a much bigger conversation in general about, if you decide not to eat something or not to consume something in a product, what are you using instead? And is the alternative sustainable? So that's just a conversation that we like to start with people. And of course, everybody will end up somewhere in this decision spectrum wherever they feel most comfortable. But for us, this is where we feel most comfortable. We have a source of palm oil that we are comfortable with, that we feel is sustainable and ethical, and so we use it sparingly in our products. And our customers, to be honest, don't seem to care. Occasionally, I say to them, this actually has palm oil, are you comfortable with it? And they just blank out. So clearly, the range of customers that we have are either not concerned or are they informed enough that they understand our choices. Either way, that works well for us. This is how we make our soap. I've told you the story of how we started and how we decided which ingredients to use and which ones to omit. And so, how did it become a business? Well, probably like most hobbies that morph into a business, it works that you start making something and then you make a bit more and then you make a bit more. And pretty soon you can no longer justify making these huge quantities of whatever you're making with your hobby unless you actually start to get some money back for it. And that's exactly what happened for us. Like I said, from the beginning, we had the idea that we wanted to sell some just to try and get some money for our farm products. But I really didn't know how to go about it. I didn't have a very clear idea. And most importantly, when we first began, I didn't know how to make soap. So, first of all, I had to make sure that I was able to create a product that was worth selling. So, a couple of years went by, and in fact, a few more, because we had a second human baby in the middle there. And I found I couldn't make soap while I was pregnant. The smell of the oils and the lye would just really make me sick. So I had a bit of a break, and then baby came, and of course we were too busy, and then we got back into it. So a few years went by, and then I got back into it, and I really, really loved it. And I picked back up the hobby and the joy of making it, and I started running workshops, and they were really popular. And so that enticed me to try new recipes and try to create a bit more of a range. So that's where it started. I started making more, and I started to be really happy with what I was making and really wanting to share it a little bit more. And so I decided I wanted to go and approach a supermarket that we have here locally that I heard was stocking other products from the Canberra region. So I thought, well, maybe they will want to stock mine as well. However, before I went there, I had to have a few bits of bureaucracy in place. So first of all, I had to check regulations and insurance. And as boring as that is certainly something that you should consider early on during your business establishment. So in Australia, making soap is actually considered manufacturing of chemicals. And so you have to have a particular registration with the government, which of course involves paying an annual fee, so that they know what you're doing, in what quantities, and how you're doing it. So I actually feel that a lot of people who sell soap just as a hobby don't have that. And unfortunately, that's illegal. So I made sure that even though I wasn't selling huge quantities at the beginning, I'm still not selling huge quantities in the grand scheme of things. I made sure that immediately I was aware of this and became a member of this government organization. So I did that. And hand in hand with that came the insurance. Now, I was pretty lucky in the sense that I already had a business insurance for the tours and workshops aside of our farm. So all I did was to add on an extra portion of the insurance to cover whether if my body products and soaps ever hurt anybody for whatever reason, at least we have some insurance. Now, by law, I have to make sure that every bar of soap or other product that I sell is labeled with all of its ingredients. So in theory, if people are reading the labels, nothing really bad should happen. Because if you're allergic, for example, to tree nuts, shea butter is a tree nut, and therefore you shouldn't buy that. But you never know. So we do have the insurance. So I got those two pieces in place, the registration with the government and the insurance. And then came the fun part, what to call my little business. Now, the obvious name that came to mind, we are Tatum Hills Farm, so it was Tatum Hills Farm Soap. But at that time, like I said, I had started making soap again and more seriously after having my second child. So at that time, my eldest daughter, who was about 6 at that time, or probably by the time we started, she was even 7, because some time passed after the baby came. So she and I had started to make soap together at night after baby went to sleep as a way of spending some special time together. And so my eldest daughter doesn't call me mum. She calls me Mao as an affectionate way of referring to me. And so the time that we were spending making soap became me and Mao time. So time of daughter and Mao, otherwise known as mum. And so the me and Mao time then led to the name of our little business, which is now called Me and Mao Soap. Mao spelled M-O-W. So there we go. That's how we came up with our little name, business name. And to this day, now both my daughters are very much involved in my business. As you can imagine, they're kids, so they go through phases when they're really involved and other times when they're not as interested. And there's the added difficulty of the fact that making soap, as I explained earlier, does have a level of danger. So the actual making of the soap is usually mostly left up to me and occasionally my eldest daughter, who's now 10. But what they really love helping with is all the side things. So, for example, my eldest daughter and now my youngest one as well, who's 4.5, will help me decorate the top of the soap bars. So that involves still interacting with the fresh soap that is still a little bit dangerous and can still sting your skin. But at least it's now already stable in the molds, it's not being moved, so I feel that that's a little bit safer. So they'll help me decorate the soap tops. Sometimes they'll help me cut the bars, and very often they will help me pack the soap, which is another whole story about how do you pack the soap. So that was the next thing that we had to come up with. So we decided the business name, and now we had to come up with a form of packaging that would be easy enough for us to do, but also in appealing looking and that we were happy with. So the first step to that, of course, was to create a logo. We've been trying from the beginning to run our business in using really on a shoestring, really spending as little money up front as possible so that the business then would be as profitable as possible for us. So initially, I went to an online platform called Design Crowd, which was the same platform that had designed our logo for the farm. And so I engaged this online community of designers again. And for a flat fee, you just get designers from all over the world contributing their ideas to your specifications, and then you get to choose the logo that you most like. And I had some back and forth with some very talented people from all over the world, but unfortunately, I had a very clear idea of what I wanted, and none of them really gave me what I was after. In fact, to be precise, the very first logo I just designed myself in PowerPoint. And so I started off with that, but very quickly I decided I needed it to perfect it and refine it. So what I did, I ended up just asking a friend who's not a designer but loves doing design as a hobby, and she has some software that really helps, and I just asked her, and she was very kind and helped me with perfecting my logo to my specifications. What was important for me was to have a round or square logo. Our farm logo is more on a line, and I found that sometimes can be tricky to put on labels or other not really merchandise because we don't sell anything, but you know, other advertising. So because I knew I had to put the soap logo on the soap labels, I really wanted to have a round or square logo. So that was my first requirement. The other requirement I had was, of course, I had to be, say, me and Mouse Soap, but also I wanted it to have a nod to our Tatton Hills Farm logo, because I wanted to give the message that the two were connected. And so after much back and forthing, we ended up using a picture of my beloved Lily Pilly goat, who unfortunately passed away, with the two of her baby triplets. So we used an actual picture that I had, and my friend turned that into a silhouette drawing, and we put that in there. And then we just used the hills that are in the Tatton Hills Farm logo and the word in Tatton Hills Farm underneath. So I feel that that sort of ticked all the boxes. And around it, there is some lavender, and that kind of, again, nods to the fact that we use the plants from our garden. So in the end, that was the logo. I'm really happy with it. I feel it really represents what we're about in just a small space. Now, in the past, when I at the very beginning, when I started packaging my soap, when I first was making unscented goat milk soap only, just for, you know, friends and family, I was packaging it like a lot of other soaps are packaged, which is, I think it's called the cigar band. Anyway, it's got nothing to do with cigars, but just with a band of paper that goes around the bar. Now, this time I wanted something different. And the reason why I wanted something different was because I found that particular type of label a bit limiting, in the sense that that only goes around a rectangular bar of soap or square bar of soap. So I thought I might want to have soaps, maybe round ones or different shapes. And I didn't want to be reshaping my packaging for every type of soap I might come up with. As it turns out, in the end, the vast majority of my bars are in fact square or rectangular, just because that has helped me streamline the production later down the track. But at the beginning, I just really didn't know that. And also I just wanted something that looked a little bit different. The other requirement was that it had to be something that I could print myself at home. And that's because, like I said, I don't have a huge amount of soap that I produce. And also, depending on where my supplies come from, what needs to be on my label may be different. So sometimes, well, luckily most of the time, if I've been able to score a vat of local olive oil, then my label will say local olive oil. But sometimes, like at the moment, there is no local olive oil to be acquired because the last year was a terrible drought. And so the oil makers have had very few oils, a very small harvest. And the only oil I could find was the fantastic extra virgin olive oil, which is frankly just too expensive to put in soap. So at the moment, unfortunately, I'm not able to use local olive oil. And so I want my label to reflect that. It just says olive oil. But, you know, depending on what it is, for a long time, I wasn't buying the fair trade or coconut oil that I'm buying now. It was organic, but not fair trade. So the label said organic coconut oil. But now, because it's organic and fair trade, I really want to be able to reflect that in my labels because I think it's important for my customers to know. So, like I said, I may tweak also the recipes a little bit, as well as, you know, changing the provenance of the ingredients, but I might just decide to make the same bar but with a slightly different combination of essential oils. So it was important to me to find a way of printing my labels at home. And it was important for me to have a label and a packaging that was as plastic free as possible. So in the end, I settled for little cardboard labels where I buy stickers and I make stickers with the logo and stickers with the information about that particular bar, and they go one on each side of my little cardboard tags, and then they get attached to the soap bar with twine. To be fully honest, I think there is some plastic in the glue of the stickers, but at this point, this is really the best I can do. So I'm pretty happy with that. I think it would compost pretty well at home. I have tried it, but my compost heap is so big that things kind of just disappear within it anyway. So, but yeah, it certainly is not something that stands out years later. So I'm pretty happy with it. People seem to like it. And I feel it stays on the soap a little bit better than the paper bands. This is another thing to consider. Your soap or your product will sit in the shops likely for a few weeks or sometimes months. And for soap, you've got to consider the fact that the conditions inside a store are pretty drying. Now, that's a good thing because your soap will keep getting harder and harder the more it sits in the store. The downside is that your soap will shrink. And so not only will it be a little bit lighter than it was when you packaged it, so it's always a good idea to sell soap that's a little bit heavier than what it says on the label, but also as it shrinks, the labels might fall off. And I find that the string tends to hold on to the soap a little bit better than the band of paper. So those are just some of the considerations that you have to keep in mind if you're packaging a product, like how will it be by the time people buy in the stores. So that's what we did. And like I said, I ended up approaching this supermarket and he was really happy. The owner there was really happy to store my product. And then, of course, he asked me how much did I want for them, and I had no idea. So I told him how much I was selling my bars to my customers directly through my online store that I had created. And he said that he wanted to be selling at the same price as me. So we negotiated the wholesale price, and it took a little bit of discussion, but eventually we came to a price that I could sell my bars to him at an obviously lower wholesale price that I was comfortable with, and he was happy then to put his markup and sell them. So that went well. This has been 2.5 years and he's still buying soap from me. So that was fantastic. My very first stockist, the very exciting. And then he told me there was a friend of his who had a store down the road who was also looking for a similar product. So I approached this other person, but unfortunately in this store, things didn't go quite as well, but it was quite the learning curve for me. So I approached the second owner, and he was also keen to take in my products. Unfortunately, because I didn't know all of a sudden I was going to be selling soap in stores, I didn't have any stock to sell to him straight away. So first up, he had to wait 2 months for my first delivery, which of course wasn't the best. That's because, as I said, soap requires about 4 to 6 weeks of curing time after it's made. So I gave myself 8 weeks because that gave me time to make the soap, let it cure, cut it up, package it with a little bit of leeway in case anything went wrong. Now, when I visited the second store, I had some samples that I showed to him. But because I was so early in my experience of selling soap, all of those designs that I was showing him, they weren't really well consolidated for me. So these were soap that looked that particular way, but I wasn't really sure how to make them look that way again. They were a little bit of a fluke. So when he said he wanted those again, which of course that's all he could do, I was showing him some samples, I went home in a bit of a panic because then I felt compelled to making the same type of bars again. I knew the recipe, but the look, I wasn't really sure. And to be frank, I don't think he would have cared, but I just felt that, you know, if I promised something, I should deliver on that same thing, not something else. And so that turned out okay, but certainly that was very stressful for me. And so from that point on, I then decided that I needed to really consolidate my recipes, consolidate my looks. Of course, it's a handmade product. Nobody's going to complain if it looks a little bit different from one time to the next, but it has to look fairly consistent in a way that it's recognizable that it is the same bar of soap. I try very hard to make all my different recipes look a bit different so that people can just look at that and say, oh yes, that's the shampoo bar that I use every time. That is the exfoliating bar that I like, just by looking at it without having to read the label. Just recently, I actually changed the look of one of my bars, and that's because as part of my streamlining, I've started making more and more bars in larger molds so that I can make more bars in one sitting. And this particular type, I was making in individual molds that I only have 24 cavities for, and I could have bought more molds, but I just felt that I just prefer to streamline them a bit more, and so I changed the look. I kept the same colors, so hopefully still recognizable, but I did sort of advertise that I was changing the look a little bit. That seems to have gone okay. To be honest, this is not a bar that is super popular, but I do like to keep it because it's one of the three types of shampoo bars that I use, that I sell, and so I feel that it rounds up the range nicely. So those are just things that I've tweaked as time has gone on, just to make my life easier and also be able to deliver a more consistent product to the stores and the customers. And also, now that I'm a little bit more confident that I have a number of stores who are happy to regularly stock my products, I try to always have some stock at home, ready to go, already cured. So whenever somebody places an order, they normally get it within a week or so, just the time it takes me to package it and go. The next step of streamlining my operation would be to package things ahead of time. But because of that problem of soap shrinking over time and the labels falling off, so far I haven't been able to do that. I normally just package it as it gets ordered. So when I deliver it, all the labels are staying on nice and tight. And then yes, they might fall off later, but at least on delivery day, everything is staying on nicely. As well as stores, the other obvious way where a lot of people sell their handmade products is markets. Now for me, I've chosen for the moment not to do many markets at all. I've done a couple of small ones, but that's all. Mostly that has to do with my sort of family life work balance. My youngest daughter, as I said, is only 4.5. So when I started this, you know, the idea of having to get up really early in the morning, leave baby, who usually wakes up when I get out of bed, she sleeps with me, then having to, you know, go, and also, you know, at home we've got all the other animals to feed, the goats to milk, and have to be maybe at the market site maybe at 6 or 7 in the morning to set up for a market that might start at 8 o'clock. That just really doesn't work for my life at the moment. As my daughter gets older, that's becoming more and more of a possibility. So I would love to do some markets in the future. Also because it's nice to have that direct contact with your customer and that immediate feedback, but for the moment it just hasn't really been practical. The other issue that I have with markets is that sometimes the rental of the store space is really expensive, and so I feel a little bit unsure about how my product is going to go in a market setting, and going to outlay all that money before I even start is a little bit unnerving, because then I'm starting my market already down a few $100s. And so I know I need to sell at least so many bars just to break even. So again, so far, I haven't felt that that would fit well with where I'm going with this little business. I'm not pushing my business very hard. I could certainly try much harder. And I feel that going to markets would really help pick up more retail and maybe more wholesale accounts. But for the moment, I'm trying to keep sane. I've got lots of other things on my plate, so I've made the choice of not doing markets just yet. However, as time has gone by, I have been keeping a little bit of an eye on what possible markets are there. And I have identified a few that have lower fees, clearly maybe because they're smaller, less popular, but I would be happy maybe to start with those and perfect my store and the way I attend markets, and then maybe work up to more, you know, larger or busier markets. So that's certainly something that's on the cards, and but I haven't done it quite yet. To be honest, at the moment I'm selling all the soap that I want to sell just through word of mouth, through some very lovely loyal customers that keep coming back, and through my wholesale accounts. And now I have a few, so they keep me busy enough. I would really love to see how far my little business could go if I were to push a little bit harder. But as I said, at the moment, that just doesn't fit in with my life. So I haven't even done any advertising, any paid advertising. I think I've done it once, and it's always hard to know once you get people buying your product. I did it last year around Christmas, and I did get a few sales over Christmas, but I did the year before as well. So it's hard to know where people have found you. I sometimes ask them, but sometimes it's just not practical. So it wasn't like a huge increase in sales thanks to the advertising. Occasionally, I have done advertising over social media platforms, Facebook and so, but again, it's very hard to know whether you're actually getting some return on your expense. So I tend to be very conservative with those kind of efforts. Now, what I am trying to do is to be a little bit more active on social media. So until recently, I had 2 separate accounts, both on Facebook. So I had 4 accounts in total, 2 on Facebook and 2 on Instagram, 1 for the farm and 1 for the soap. So the farm one is at Tatum Hills Farm, T-A-T-U-M Hills Farm. And the soap is at Me and, spelled A-N-D, spelled out. So Me and Mow, M-O-W, soap. So I have these 2 lots of accounts. But recently I realized it was just getting a bit hard to keep on top of both, and I just wasn't posting much and they were a little bit sad. So I decided, and I don't know whether that's going to be a good decision or not, but it felt good. Unfortunately, when you switch accounts or merge accounts, you lose a lot of followers, but never mind. Hopefully a lot of them will find me again. So I did a little bit of a campaign over my Me and Mow soap account to notify my followers that I was moving. So I've kept that account open because people will still find me that way. And I do want to interact with customers that way. But I have kind of finished posting there, and my last post was a post saying I've moved everything to the farm account. People seem to be happy. I did a little poll to ask them in my stories, and people were keen to see other things in their feeds, not just soap. I guess my original rationale for having the two separate accounts was, well, if you're following a farm, you might not care about me making soap. And if you are into soap, you might not want to be hassled with animal pictures. But as it turns out, of course, that's not the case. People are a little bit more flexible than that. And so I thought having them together would probably do, hopefully, two things. One, will allow me to be a little bit more focused and so have more of a posting schedule, which is what I've been trying to do over the last few weeks. And that's my goal for 2021, to have a more regular schedule where I have days when I post about the farm, I have days when I post about the soap, and just have those moving, or days like today where I post about the podcast. So that's kind of part of the rationale, just try to be more efficient and a little bit more present on these accounts. But at the same time, I also really wanted to make sure that I was telling the full story. I guess both the soap and the farm are so tightly intertwined, I thought, you know, people would really get a better picture for who we are and for who are the people behind the business that produces the soap they buy. So far people seem to enjoy it, and we'll see where we go from there. So if you'd like to follow us, I would totally love it if you'd like to come to our farm account. So that's at Tatum Hills Farm, T-A-T-U-M Hills Farm. And that's sort of where we're at the moment. So if you're thinking of starting a little business or just making soap because it's fun, it is fun. Go for it. I really encourage you to have a go. And that is also a really nice eco-friendly habit to pick up. If you can make your own soap and shampoo bars or buy from a local person who makes them by hand, you will be reducing your waste so much. And really, that will be great for the environment. And that's it for another episode of the Homesteading Roller Coaster. If you enjoyed the content, we'd love it if you subscribed. We'd also really appreciate a rating and review on your podcast platform. Or send us a message. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Tatum Hills Farm. That's T-A-T-U-M Hills Farm. Or on our website at www.tatumhillsfarm.com.au. Thank you for listening. Bye.